Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
These two guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball. And live to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls with Phil Mackey and Kyle Tighe.
Okay, was last night the greatest win in Timberwolves history? Forget about the Kevin Garnett game against the Kings. Forget about the game 83 against the Nuggets. Was last night peak euphoria for the Minnesota Timberwolves?
I was going to come in here today and be like, I think that was the best win of the season, but I knew you'd get on me because I've said that only five other times this season. But incredible, I mean, same stuff that we all tweeted out last night, but an incredible win, not only against the defending champs who have actually been, the Warriors have been pretty hot these last couple of weeks, but you're doing it without Carl, you're doing it without Rudy. D'Angelo Russell gets a tough whistle and gets ejected. Naz Reid is cramping. Jaden McDaniels, we thought, had a hamstring injury. Kyle Anderson has back spasm. Ant looks like he just needs an injection of hot Cheetos. Like, everyone is just tired because the Warriors
could actually, ironically, just use some time off during the All-Star break, potentially. He's also fighting to try and get in, which we'll find out today.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, it was really, you don't, I think Alan Horton, I retweeted this, but Alan Horton had, like, the best stat ever. So I'm just going to run to my phone quick. But it was twice in the last 2 weeks, Minnesota has rallied from double-digit fourth-quarter deficits, obviously against Toronto. And then last night against Golden State, Minnesota is now 7-157 over the last five seasons, down 10 or more in the fourth quarter. Chris Finch has been the head coach for six of those wins. So essentially, before Chris Finch got here, if you were down 10 in the fourth quarter, it's get to the ramps. Like, just get to the exits. You're out of here. And again, we've said our piece. You know, I think Chris Finch has his ups, has his downs this season, as has pretty much everyone on this roster, everyone in the front office, everyone in the ticket set. I mean, everyone doing anything with this team has had ups and downs. You and I have had ups and downs. But Finch is a really good coach, and he coached the hell out of that game last night with his timeouts, the way he kind of banked on Austin Rivers a little more. I think he played 28 minutes. Didn't bring Luka Garza back, I think, in the second half, just kind of rode Naz Reid as much as he could. So incredible win, and that's one of the wins, Phil. I know we hate doing this, but that's the type of win that's like, okay, we can erase one of the Houston Rockets or Detroit Pistons losses that were frustrating.
I mean, I'd rather have them both, but yeah.
Right, that's true. But it's like, that was a, just did not see that one coming. So they set themselves up again. Every time you win, you move up five slots in the standings. Every time you lose, you drop six, but they wake up this morning in the sixth seed, and they got a lot of teams kind of clumped with them. I already saw Golden State's resting all their guys in Denver. Like, Memphis has a bunch of guys. So they're going to just need every win they can get. We keep saying that, but a really fun night last night and a really fun week for, like, Wolves Twitter, because it's pretty much just us against the world lately when it comes to the narrative around this team.
It's also kind of amazing, too. I guess we can, early on here in this episode, we can give you the Western Conference playoff picture update. Every win and every loss moves. It's like a roller coaster. It moves you up five. Oh, now, oh my God, they're the five seed. And then they lose a game. And oh God, now they're back. Now they're like fighting to stay in the play-in, because there's what, between, let's see here, the Clippers, even like, dude, the Kings in the three seed, all the way down to the Lakers. There's six games separating the three the 13 right now. And the Wolves, if the playoffs started today, the Wolves would be, they would avoid the play-in. They would be tied with Dallas for the five seed, but I think they would be the six seed based on tiebreakers here. So it's amazing. Like, a win like that, It's great on its own, but the fact that it just like bumps you back up to the six, yep. and it's just standings watching is a blast right now on a nightly basis with like 25 or 30 games left, man.
What is it? Eight teams in the Western Conference, and there's only 15 of them. Eight teams have 25 or 26 losses. I've parity, all that stuff. Like, I've never seen this. Obviously, the Nuggets are kind of running away with it. The Grizzlies, to a lesser extent, as well. But just to, like you said, 3-13 are pretty much all a good week away from being a top five seed and a bad week away from being out of the play-in. That's crazy. So yeah, you're right on my last point. It would be nice to have one of those Pistons wins. You know, if they're 29-25, they're the four seed. So one win just bumps them up. But incredible win, incredible gutsy win against the team. Naz Reid, who I think we're going to talk about, was fantastic. Anthony Edwards didn't look like himself, but gave you buckets in overtime when you needed it. D'Angelo Russell was kind of that guy again who kept you alive when you were, I think, down 14 and kind of just shot them back into it and then got kind of a weird whistle to follow. But everyone contributed from 1-9, and it was a really good win against a team that I know a lot of people are watching, because when Golden State plays, the world watches those games, and to have the Wolves pull it out was pretty cool.
Yeah, I love Anthony Edwards, you know, it's hard not to talk about him for podcasts at a time, but a game in which he was having trouble knocking down threes. He shot some free throws, but he wasn't looking like himself. He turned the ball over a bunch. But at the end, okay, it's overtime, and the Warriors are making a concerted effort to try and make sure the ball goes to somebody else. And there was that play where I'd have to go watch back to see where the trap started, but he was like 5 or 6 feet from the three-point line, and they trap him in the half court. And ordinarily, he'd like playmaker Ant would pop out, and he would, okay, let's start the spin cycle now, find someone. He dribbled around the trap.
It was incredible.
And then zigzagged his way into the lane, into the trees, and wound up sort of weaving his way around for a left-handed layup that kept the momentum going forward. That was a superstar play right there. That was, you can throw defenders at me. You're the Warriors. You can throw your whole thing at me. I'm just going to dribble around everybody and get to the rack with my left hand.
He went 1-on-5, and he scored. And they needed the bucket. I think it put him up 5 with like a minute left. Also, too, what's really cool, that's a really smart play to bring up. A couple possessions later, again, when they're trying to ice the game, they kind of double him again. They put Wiggins on him. Wiggins does a really good job of defending him. And instead of forcing a bad shot, what does Ant do? The same thing he did when he had Jaden in the corner against the Jazz. Throws it to Naz. Let's Naz make a play. Naz misses the three and immediately goes and gets his rebound, dunks it, game over. So his ability to, again, is there has been another resurgence of, I don't know, man, like hit pieces on Anthony Edwards this last week or so. He continues to make the right play, and even in a game when he's not maybe making the impact that he usually would, he still gives you clutch moments and makes the right play more and more often. That just is like, what else can you want from a kid who turned 21 5 months ago?
Yeah. Okay, before we get into the Naz Reid appreciation and forward-looking questions portion of this podcast, so you mentioned the national media. What have you sort of seen? I know you've got a rant in the bag here somewhere, if I can draw it out.
We did this about the All-Star stuff earlier in the week, you and you being more mature and more professional and just a better human than me, kind of was like, you know what, who cares? Who cares about what the national media says? And you were right, because All-Star stuff, shoes, all those awards, like whatever. It hit different, though, on Wednesday when someone I like love, I think Ryan Russillo is one of the best. He is a great podcast. He actually watches the games. He says it on his own podcast. I have no life. I just watch basketball 24/7. He did a 8-minute thing on Anthony Edwards, and he praised Ant, and he said he could be one of those five guys that is a franchise changer. But it was dangerous in how he did it, because he essentially shit on all of the guys that are on Ant's team and then started to lay the groundwork for the Anthony Edwards trade demand. Oh. He said it. He was like, you know, how much longer is Ant going to put up with this and not having anyone around him that he can trust? He did 8.5 minutes straight on the Timberwolves and did not mention Jaden McDaniels' name once.
I feel like Jaden McDaniels is like not on the national radar, even though he's one of the best wing defenders in the league.
But then, so again, you were right in putting me in my place and be like, hey, chill out. But if you don't think if you don't have Jaden McDaniels in your national conversation, then I don't want to subscribe to your stuff. I don't want to pay for your paywall. I don't want to like listen to that, because everywhere else it's like he's the 10 best defenders in the league. And some of Russell's stuff, too, was just like, I don't like D'Angelo Russell. He called D'Angelo Russell the worst basketball player in the league. Now, you have had your issues with him. I've had my issues with him. But he's also had now 5 weeks of some of the best play ever. I mean, Kendrick Perkins last night called D'Lo and Ant the best backcourt in 2023.
Yeah, that's a little aggressive.
A little aggressive, but it's also like at least someone acknowledges that, yes, the one game that D'Lo was really bad the other night that they lost to the Kings, he was really bad. But the night before against the Kings, he had, what, 7 made threes? Last night he goes 7 made threes again, 11 for 23, so just under 50%, and led the team in scoring. Like, it's just, I don't care if you shit on the Wolves. Phil was right. I was wrong. They deserve a lot of it. They deserve the criticism. They've never been a good franchise. But when you start, and you listen to that Russell thing, when you start doing the thing of, like, how much long is he going to sign his rookie extension? How much longer is he going to be here? That stuff is really, truly, like, dangerous to me, because now you're planting those seeds of, like, getting another homegrown player out of a small market. And they don't do that with Ja. They don't do that with Scotty Barnes, who's older than Ant. They don't do that with Evan Mobley, who's older than Ant. So yeah. I thought that was kind of disingenuous. And then Russillo followed up today and was like, I can't believe Timberwolves fans were on me for praising Ant. It's like, listen, man, just because you bench more than us and your chest is stronger doesn't mean our ears are weaker. Like, we heard the podcast. We heard what you said. You basically painted the picture of this kid wanting to get out of here. And none of that's true. He loves it here. He has a really good system internally and his team and stuff. Like, it's just, stuff just drives me crazy. So if you don't want to put him in the All-Star game, that's fine. That's cool. But if you want to start making stuff up about how much longer can he put up with this, put up with what, dude? He's a sixth seed in the West. Like, talk to Dame. Where's Dame right now? He's 11th. How much longer is he going to put up with it? He's older. He has a less of a career coming forward. Like, maybe he should demand a trade, right? Like, maybe Steph should demand a trade. They don't want to trade James Wiseman, who, by the way, went second overall in the 2020 NBA draft. Slick DNP CD last night. Okay?
How about that?
So just doesn't play, not injured. I had to, like, confirm. I was like, is he hurt? Nope, he's just bad. So, again, when you want to question if the Minnesota Timberwolves can, you know, develop their players, they got two guys in the 2020 draft who are all-star and all-defensive team.
Yeah.
Bring that up. And
rant. Bravo, by the way. That's a wonderful rant. Very well said.
I'm sorry. I got to calm down. Less coffee. But I will say last night when you were texting me, like, do you want to do another podcast? I was, February, we're back to drinking wine. It's so great. Dry January is a thing of the past. We're back. Wolves are winning. Wine is flowing. So I was on one last night. But thank you for letting me get that off my chest.
When Nasri grabs his own rebound and throws a dunk down and that second glass of Pinot Noir hits, Kyle just running around the living room. I think there is a misperception, and some of it's self-inflicted.
Yep.
The Wolves definitely paid a lot in draft capital and player capital for a divisive player in Rudy Gobert. And then they compounded that by starting very slow, by starting 16-21 in the 2022 calendar year portion of the season. And they had a come to Jesus player meeting. I think the overpay, if you will, on the trade and then starting slow validated everyone's thoughts about this train wreck franchise, right? Well, classic Wolves, they make a desperate trade and then it blows up in their face. And everyone, like December 31st, everyone just said, oh, could write those guys off. Yep. They're going to probably have to trade Cat. Anthony Edwards is going to get pissed off. But if you take the temperature of the room from January 1st through February 1st, that win last night, and I get a small sample size, but it feels like this thing is progressing forward. I don't think you're going to see them all of a sudden like lose 9 out of 10 games, knock on wood. I think Anthony Edwards has reached a new level. So I think there's just a misperception about where the Wolves are at that, oh, Anthony Edwards is going to become a malcontent. Well, wait a second. They're about to make the playoffs, most likely for the second straight year. I think there's a better chance to me that they climb up to like the 4 seed than fall out of the 10.
Agreed.
Even though everything is scrunched together. There is a big question about how do you integrate Karl Anthony Towns, and we'll talk about some of this stuff. But the Wolves are about to make the playoffs for the second consecutive year for the first time in almost 20 years. Anthony Edwards is exploding. If the roster isn't perfect, they have trade pieces that they can leverage either now in the next week or sometime this summer. Like, there are things that can be done. There are moves that can be made. They could move Karl Anthony Towns off of the team for assets if they needed to. So, like, to act like this is some dead end and they're screwed and floundering, it's still ascending. It might have to look different in a year from now. But it's ascending, and it's becoming Anthony Edwards' team. And those are all good things for the Timberwolves, even if you remove bias. Like, we follow this thing closely and probably just kind of know the temperature of the room more than the national media, which I don't even blame for writing them off. They have to force people to think that they're relevant.
Yep.
Go win a playoff series, and then people will say, oh, okay, interesting. Anthony Edwards led the Timberwolves to the second round of the playoffs for the first time since 2004, right?
Yep. And again, Phil, I want people listening to this. Phil is the smart one here. I am the petty loser. It's just
that if I'm the smart one here, then we're in bad shape.
That Rasilopod not only does he do 8.5 minutes and he never mentions Jaden, he's like, I don't know if Ant has any running mates with him. It's like, dude, what about the kid next to him, like, that is all defensive, all worldly? But then he had Raja Bell on later in the podcast, and they went on this kind of random attack about, like, Raja was like, I don't want to hear Ant talk about what he eats anymore, eating Cheetos. Which it's like, okay, that's fine. We kind of did the Popeyes Gate thing too, but that same energy wasn't there when Giannis was talking about the first time he had a smoothie, or yep. Joel Embiid talked about when he had Shirley Temple. Like, people love that shit. You know, if Ant wants to eat Cheetos and then go drop 30, 10, and 8, like, can we keep that same energy with that? So it was the Russillo thing. I don't want to say going over the line, because that sounds like I was offended, and I wasn't. But it was just, when you start talking about how much longer will this guy be happy there when he's one of the happiest players in the world, it's just, it's weird. And then, yeah, too, to your standing point, like, Golden State, they have a lot of issues. Phoenix has an aging Chris Paul. Utah, who knows what they're doing? Where's Zion Williams? Like, there's a lot of teams below the Wolves that also have issues. And it kind of reminds, one of my friends texted me the other day when you said, like, they're talking about the Timberwolves like it's December or November. One of my friends texted me the other day and he's like, what's all this stuff about the For You page on Twitter? Like, why is everyone complaining about this? Like, just have the Twitter that's just one timeline. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, everyone has Twitter on their phone and has these two weird tabs and the For You page sucks. And he's like, oh, sorry, I hadn't updated my phone in 2 months. That's like, yeah. That's like the national media. It's like, they just haven't done the latest software update to be like, oh, actually, the Timberwolves don't suck. The Timberwolves are actually kind of fun, and you're just using the software that you had in December or November to essentially cover this.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the For You tab on the Twitter.
Oh, dude, let's go. I hate it so much.
I don't mind it. Oh. I don't mind it. For two reasons. Number one, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, based on the algorithm and the people that I interact with or fight with
on
Twitter.
That's true.
Okay, it's going to kind of show me within the last 24 hours, you know, what I may have missed. Okay. And if I don't like it, I can just swipe one over I can read my feed. People freak out over, like, what's this For You page? Just swipe one over and you can read your timeline in chronological order.
I still would like my active timeline, latest tweets first, to be like the standard. So maybe if they could just switch sides and put the For You page on it. It's okay. A lot of extra thumb work, but you're right. I do always go to the For You page, and there's some weird either political take that's like, I don't subscribe to any of this, or it's probably you arguing with someone who's not understanding your Kirk Cousins takes or a Naz Reid take. But yeah, it is a good way to like follow up on things you miss. It's just, I wish the order of it was different. But okay, you're right. Again, I'm just all worked up for no reason. So let's talk Naz Reid, because you had a really good Naz Reid point that I think went over some people's head.
Well, people got mad. Last night, Naz Reid was slicing and dicing the Golden State Warriors for 2.5 hours. And if you are interested in a kitchen and life-changing experience, I may be over-exaggerating a little bit, but I'm telling you, my wife and I have made it a goal to be more adultish, if you will, in 2023. So we're cooking more of our own meals. We're spending more time in the kitchen. And my new friends at Vivrant, online knife sharpening service, have come in and have heightened this experience for us. So what you do is they'll mail you a kit. It's a male-friendly, mailman-friendly kit. A knife isn't going to poke out of a bag and, like, get the mailman. They send you a kit. You send your knives in to be professionally sharpened. This all takes place within just a few days. They'll send you replacement knives in the meantime as well. If you've never had your knives sharpened, and, like, most people have knives, most people don't get them sharpened, it is a game-changing experience, and Vivrant makes this process super easy. So you can either go to Vivrant.com, that's Vivront.com, or you can stop in to the store in Wayzata where Joseph and his team will just sort of help you along with the experience. They also, it's not just about sharpening knives. They have classes, skills classes for you, Japanese knives as well. The first 100 score listeners to use the promo code SKOR will receive a free vegetable peeler as well with your order. So, and on the philanthropic side, every order through Vivrant supports paying off school lunch account balances in our local schools.
I love that. That's really cool.
Get those knives sharpened, help pay off lunches. VIVRONT.com. So, Kyle, I sent what I thought was just sort of a fun...
No, it was a good tweet.
...relevant, innocuous poll out on Twitter, and I actually went to bed, and I woke up and was like, just getting dunked on by, like, Wolves bloggers and stuff. You're trying to divide the fan base. No, so we have a week until the trade deadline. We've talked about this for the last, like, 2 months, basically. The Wolves have D'Angelo Russell, free agent. They've got Naz Reid, free agent. Jalen Noel on a much lesser scale, a free agent. And if you look ahead, for instance, because this is why this matters, why this conversation matters. In 2 years from now, the NBA salary cap is projected to be $140 million.
Yep.
Give or take. But it's projected to be $140 million. Luxury tax, $170 million. 2 years from now, Kat's salary is going to be $50 million. Gobert, $44 million. I'm estimating here, I believe, I believe based on the rookie max contract, when you come out of your rookie contract into a max like Anthony Edwards is about to, I think it's going to be about $35 million in that first year for him. I think it was 33 this year. I think it probably goes up to like 35 for the first year, and that first year will be in 2 years. I'm estimating on Jaden McDaniels, they're going to extend him almost certainly, and it's probably going to be for like half of Ant, maybe. Like, I don't think it's a max. Maybe it's like 20.
I did this with Dane Moore on Friday, but
what did he say?
Our thing was, is it start at 4 years, $100 million? So that's four, you know, 25 a year. And then we went up to Dane's question was, could he get a max? I don't think he's going to get what Ant gets, but I if you're his team or his agent or whatever, like, you're gonna. I mean, again, this is all semantics because they're gonna pay him both, but that number could get much higher than we think. Especially as we're just daily out here doing propaganda for this guy being the best defensive wing in the league. So maybe I should cut that down a little bit. But no, back to your point, like, he's going to get paid at least $25 million a year too.
So I have him probably low at 20 with this math here. So 50 plus 44, that's 94, plus 20 brings us up to 114 on the low end. Mm-hmm. And then an attack on another 30 to 35 for Ant. That brings us up somewhere between $145 and $150 million. Again, with a projected cap of $140 million, those four players alone have you at or above the salary cap. It's a soft cap. You can re-sign. You've got bird rights on Naz Reid, as people are pointing out. Like, well, you can re-sign Naz Reid. Well, but Naz Reid could also go play 35 minutes a night somewhere as a starting player and not have to worry about Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns. So looking out 2 years from now, you have to fill out the rest of your roster with guys that make at least a couple million each, right? And if you want the Kyle Anderson types. So you have huge decisions to make about who you want taking up the bulk of your salary cap up to the luxury tax and maybe over in 2 years from now. And so I tweeted out last night. Again, this is probably a little bit of recency bias, if not a lot, because of how Naz played last night. You can only keep two going forward. Would you keep Kat and Gobert, Kat and Naz, or Gobert and Naz? Almost 9,000 votes on this thing in like 15 hours. 45% of people said they would keep Gobert and Naz Reid. It was by far the most popular option here. And then tied at 27.5% are keep Kat and Naz Reid, keep Kat and Gobert. So the Naz Reid votes, if you just look at the Naz Reid options, it equates to, let's see here, over 70% of the fan base wants to keep Naz in some combo. And then the other ones for Kat, it's only 54%. And then for Gobert, it's about the same as Naz. So Kat is sort of third among the people that voted on this poll of which of those you would want to keep, which of those two.
If anything, the only reason I can imagine people thought they would push back on you is, again, I thought I'm going to go two ways with this. One, maybe the timing was weird. Maybe people, like, it reminded me of winning, like, a parlay or a scratch-off and being like, oh, man, we won some money. And then being like, yeah, but I still got to do my taxes. Like, that's what Phil was doing. He's like, hey, do you want to discuss this Naz thing 5 minutes after they had a really fun win? And people are like, no, I don't want to do that. You're trying to break up the team. It's like, no. This is, now to my second point, this is part of the Gobert stuff that is just going to linger until, I guess, forever, or until these contracts expire.
Yeah.
And I say that because you invested so many extra picks. Like, if you had $1 million budget for your whole life and you overpaid for the house and it was a $600,000 house and you paid $900,000, you only have $100,000 left to, like you said, build the roster. So yes, they can use the bird rights to keep Nas. I think you could make a argument that you can actually have Nas, Carl, and Rudy at least for 1 year. But to your point of this roster getting really expensive down the road, that's real. Now, do you want to discuss it on Wednesday when they beat the Warriors? I get if people don't, but Phil's point is valid, and it's like, this is a decision you're going to have to make because the Rudy thing was so expensive and invested so much assets that like every move moving forward now is a little more important and a little more dangerous. And yeah, if Nas does 4 years, I don't know, $32 million, would you just swallow that $8 million a year and just we'll figure it out down the road? Yeah, for sure. But I don't know if he's going to do that.
But he,
I don't know.
But it's his choice,
right? Like, I mean, he might want 4 for $60 million. And if you do, you want to add $15 million to the bench for your third center, like he can play power forward. He can do so many things. He's also durable. He plays all the games basically. But I don't think your question, other than maybe just the timing, like it's a really good question, and this team has to figure this out. And you're compromised because the deadline isn't a week from now. I mean, Dane tweeted out today, like, is Nas now officially on everyone's radar worth a first-round pick? If you're not going to resign him, or you don't think you're going to have the ability to, and I don't know, Mark Lowry, Alex Rodriguez, Glenn Taylor don't want to pay a luxury tax, like, then get a first-round pick for him. And I'm saying that as a guy who was like, I don't want Nas traded at all. But if you can't pay him, it's the D'Lo stuff. If you can't pay them, you can't lose them for nothing. You develop guys. And a first-round pick thrown into your coffer when you don't really have a lot is a big deal. So I don't think they'll trade him. I don't want them to trade him. But these are real conversations that happen inside. So for you to post them outside like you did, this is real. Like, it's a week from today that the trade deadline, and you have to have a decision made on. And I know Doogie's been all over this. Like, they've been trying to extend him. But if I'm Nas Reed and I go drop, like, 24 and 16 on the defending champions, I might want to go into the summer and let people pitch me and put me in helicopters and put me on cruise ships and like see how much they'll pay me.
That's the thing. I think if you can extend him and even if you're not planning on keeping him for the 4 years, then you can maybe revisit in a year if you need to trade him or something. But it's so tough when we're ticking down the weeks until he's a free agent. Our guy Jace Frederick, by the way, from the Pioneer Press, he tweeted this interesting nugget. It's a small sample size, but Nas Reed has made 8 starts for the Wolves this year. The Wolves are 6-2 in Nas Reed's 8 starts. Nas's net rating in those starts is a plus 14. That leads the NBA among starting centers. Again, it's a small sample size, and it would probably regress if he started more than 8 games, but he's just a really good, hardworking, high-energy player. He can shoot. He can get to the bucket. He can handle. You know, like last year, there were some certain games, and maybe even early this year, where I would just kind of deem them not Nas Reed games. Or if he was in the game, he'd be like a minus 15 with 5 fouls or something.
Yep.
And that still happens once in a while. I am not saying that he is as good of a player as Gobert is or as good of a player as Towns is. But if you have a limited amount of money to spend on your roster, and it's a soft cap again, but and if you have a limited amount of time and minutes to give to, you know, 6'10" and taller players, would it be more valuable to have Nas for like $8 or $10 million, young? He's not 30, right? He's like, what is he, 25?
23,
dude. He's 23. He aligns with the Jaden McDaniels and the Anthony Edwards sort of age bracket. This is where I get stuck on this. I don't think you can have him. I think if he's going to re-sign with the Timberwolves, he's going to want some assurances long-term that he plays like 30, 35 minutes, right? Not that he's like going to be selfish, but if he has a chance to go sign somewhere else for equal or more money and get more playing time and get to the next level of his career, can you promise that to him if you're the Timberwolves? It's kind of a tough spot. Would you rather have a first-round pick for Nas and say, oh, man, sorry, we can't keep you. Here's a first-round pick. Or would you rather keep him for a lot less money and trade Karl Anthony Towns for 2 first-round picks and, like, 2 other, you know, rotation players? Like, these are things they're probably discussing every day inside the Target Center right now.
And, you know, for all the criticisms that the Timberwolves receive, and most of it is well earned, like, this was an undrafted free agent that they have essentially developed over these last 4 years into a starting center. And there's 30 NBA teams. There's not even 30 NBA starting centers. Like, some of these teams throughout, you know, they still run out a DeAndre Jordan in their rotation or a JaVale McGee, guys who are way past their prime. So if I'm Nas in my rookie year, I made $800,000. And again, the cost of eggs is skyrocketing. Like, he probably wants to cash in on his development. The playing time thing I've never thought of. That's a scary thing. Like, if he really was like, I want to start. And I don't, Naz Reid is like one of the most humble competitive guys in the league.
He probably wants to start.
If he wants to start, and
he
that's
plays
like
18 minutes a night, dude. He averages 18 minutes a night right now.
Then that's probably a deal breaker because, again, as I said last time too, like whatever you decide to trade, I think at some point, because just this is the NBA, at some point someone's probably going to get traded. I think Tim Connelly has another blockbuster trade up his sleeve. Is that summer 2023? I don't know. It might be summer 2025. Maybe that's Carl. Maybe that's Rudy. Who knows? But for now, I'm just really in favor of just trying to keep as much talent as you can and making it essentially Mark and Alex and Glenn's problem to pay the bill. I mean, you have a competitive team now. I think in February is when ticket renewals start up. Like, this team's on the ascending. You're going to be able to probably raise prices and, you know, bring more people into the stands. So you're not losing money by any means. And this team is already worth more than it was sold for at the time. So you just got to, you know, open up the page or the checkbook, because Naz Reid, as much as you and I have enjoyed Jalen Noel, like if you have to pick between Naz Reid and Jalen Noel, it's not even close in my mind. You keep Naz and you just figure it out later. You just say, we're going to sign you. And then if we trade you in December of 2023, we'll do that. But you can't lose Naz Reid, someone you have invested in and has taken such a leap, for nothing. And that's why Phil said what he said. And that's why if there's a first round pick dangling out there and it's, God forbid, unprotected, you at least have to have the meeting, right? Like, you have to get everyone in the room and be like, what do you think? Even if you decide no.
Yeah, I love, there's something about him, his whole story about dominating the summer league and just kind of grinding his way to that contract with a dominant summer league. And then, okay, we're going to give you a few minutes here and there, your rookie year, you're 20 years old. And he's just like every step of the way he's had to claw and scrape, and he plays like it. And I think his teammates respect it. The fact that his teammates will just stare off into the abyss with media around and say, Naz Reid. Like, there's a certain gravitational pull he has that Gobert and Towns don't necessarily. And I'm, again, he's not as good as those guys are. But there's some intangible peripheral things here that have value that don't show up in a box score. And if you want to go to the box score, so he's averaging 18 minutes a night. If you were to go per 36 minutes, like, around the amount of time that a starting player would get you, 36 minutes a night. He averages 21 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, steal and a half, 2 blocks, shoots 53% from the field, and he's like a league average 3-point shooter, again, for a 6'9" guy. He's not the 3-point shooter that Towns is, but the ability to get up and down the court, play with energy. If he doesn't need to be a high-usage player for any night, you don't feel guilty about it. Because there's some nights where with Towns and Gobert, you're like, oh, my God, we're paying these guys like $40 million. He's just kind of standing in the corner here. Like, you feel obligated to work things around them, even if you're, like, winning a game. It's like, oh, you got to get Gobert a couple lobs here, or, you know, he's going to get salty about it. Yeah. Like, with Naz, you don't feel that pressure. It's like, yeah, if there's a game where he just doesn't do a lot, it's okay. It doesn't matter. Like, Walker Kessler, oh, whatever. Yeah. He's just a guy.
And He's a guy for sure. No, and what you're saying is right, and then I always try to think about how you cover football. Naz making $1.9 million this year. If Naz is not – if you're having one of those Naz nights where he just can't defend whoever the opponent is, then you can sit him. Mm-hmm. But Naz is going to run into a lesser problem because he'll never make what Carl makes. He'll never make what Rudy makes. But Naz will need to continue developing, because next year, if Naz does sign a crazy 4-year, $60 million deal – and Naz is making 15 next year, well, then you can't have Naz nights. You can't have that night where it's like, oh, Naz doesn't have it tonight, we bench him. It's, nope, you make 15 million, you got to go out there and get cooked. So he needs to continue to develop like any player does, whether they get paid or not. But also, you know, I'm thinking that playing time thing you said is just stuck in my brain. If that was a deal breaker for him, then yeah, they're going to lose him. I know, and this is always reported and stuff too, but he is so, so, so tight with Nate Knight and Jaden McDaniels. They're like his two best friends. They all hung out in the summer. They stay in Minneapolis. They practice. They train together. So that might be something that keeps him around. I know he loves being here. But again, just from 30,000 feet, this kid came from LSU. He said it, not out. Like, he was fat. He was out of shape. And I've never really seen a guy in 4 years develop. I mean, Ant is taking a leap, right? Or Jaden and stuff. Like, Naz started from a ball of clay, literally, and has become what is like one of the 20 best centers, I guess, in the league. That's on a team that has two other ones that are in the top 20. So it's not nothing. It's just incredible to watch. He's one of my favorite players to ever cover. And when the things weren't going well, not this season, but just when the Wolves were a bad franchise those first couple of years, everyone in that organization said Nas is the most competitive person. He takes losing the hardest. And I know you and I are lockstep in this. I love that. Like, I just want a guy who's going to go out there and compete. No one falls down more than Nas, and no one gets up more than Nas. And just, again, last night, he was 2 for 8 from three. He had so many opportunities to win the game himself. Late in the game, he missed so many threes. Yeah. But then for him to do what he does best, he misses the three, gets the rebound, you know, yams it on a guy's head, game over.
It is worth noting that if you look at his two-man lineup pairings, the worst among the guys that he's played like 100 minutes with, his worst pairing is with Rudy Gobert. Him and Rudy Gobert on the court at the same time are minus 12 points per 100.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another factor, is that, okay, let's say you decide, you know, we're going to roll with Naz Reid and we may wind up trading Kat for some assets. To this point, he hasn't really gelled with Gobert. So he's not someone you wouldn't like run those guys out as a 4 or 5 combination. So,
and you know who was bad last night? The worst player on the 9-man rotation last night against a small team in Golden State that runs for 24 seconds on the shot clock. We like him, but Luka Garza was unplayable.
Yeah.
So that was one of those moments where it's like, you know, Naz Reid in another matchup against a small team, like, it would have been great to see Rudy play last night and then Naz back him up rather than Naz playing and Luka back him up. But Luka was 0 points, 3 rebounds in 13 minutes. Naz, 24, 13, 4 assists in 35 minutes. So just, you know, Naz is still this team's third best center by a mile.
Agreed.
And that's, you just can't afford to lose that. So yeah, this next week, I would imagine he stays. I would imagine they don't actually do much before the deadline because they have a good team now. But it's a conversation that they're having. I know that for sure. So when you brought it up, it's a good conversation to be discussed.
It's so hard.
Even if it's uncomfortable.
Long term, you do want to recoup. You gave up so many first-round picks for Gobert. It'd be nice to find other avenues to get first-round picks back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is, and Dave mentioned it, like, this is probably one of them. You could probably trade Naz Reid for a first-round pick sometime in the next week. And now you got some assets back here for future drafts. But you'd also be removing one of your best rotational players in a stretch run in which you're trying to do some damage and win a playoff series. And the same with D'Lo. Like, you could, at this point, I don't know what the exact value of D'Lo is, but this version of D'Lo on an expiring contract, I don't know that it could get you a first round pick. I don't know the type of team that would even be looking to acquire him, but he's valuable right now. Mm-hmm. If you were to trade him for something out of fear that he'll walk for nothing, you know, it would help you long term to get an asset for him, but it would also really hurt your chances of doing damage if you get this version of D'Lo the rest of the year and you remove him. It would, and some people are probably listening to this like, why are you guys even talking about trading Naz and D'Lo? It makes no sense. Long term, if those guys walk for nothing and you're already without all these first round draft picks going forward, it's poor asset management if those guys walk for nothing. It really is.
No, and I don't have an answer.
It's crazy,
for it.
Dude.
It's crazy. It literally, like, it is a weird damned if you do, damned if you don't. And again, I think the front office has just a ton of smart people in it, and I think they're comfortable with these conversations or these situations. But the Gobert trade, when you are a small market and you did overpay and you gave up extra assets, like, you just have put yourself in a situation where every decision you now make needs to kind of be correct. So yeah, if everyone listening to this knew and Naz was just open about it, he's like, yeah, I'm not resigning here, then you got to move him. No matter what it is, because you need, this season matters because you're kind of all in and you're trying to win as many games and do something here. But you also have to have a long-term vision too. And it's like, if you knew, which we don't at all, that Naz wasn't going to stay here past this summer, then you need to start accumulating assets because those assets become other Naz Reeds, or you put them in other trades. Yeah. So I don't know. It's a great question to have. I'm glad you kind of brought it up, even though some people aren't. But I have no answer what you do. It's just that's what makes being a GM or a president tough in the NBA, because, you know, are you focused on trying to win a game in February 15th, or are you focused on trying to have a little more competitive, you know, well-fitting roster in December of 2023?
And are you trying to put assets around Anthony Edwards long term? What are those assets?
So he doesn't demand a trade.
We'll but at the end of the day, this is a really fun team to watch right now. They've got one of the best records in the NBA since the beginning of the calendar year, and they just beat the Warriors in overtime, a fully stocked Warriors team that's been really struggling on the road for some reason. But
I saw they hadn't won a game in overtime since 2017.
The Wolves?
No, the Warriors. I don't know if that's accurate.
I think last night I saw they were 1-2 in overtime this year.
Okay, that's probably not right then. So
That would be an amazing stat.
We'll cut that. There was a stat though about them like blowing double digit leads. I mean, watching them as well last night to do a little game recap. Like the Golden State Warriors basically have 7 players that they can play. They're getting nothing from James Wiseman, who again was drafted 2nd overall, Moses Moody, Jonathan Kuminga actually was kind of nice last night, but he doesn't play a lot. Like they're just, that's another team that like they have way less of a window. Obviously, they're far more likely to make a playoff run or win another title than the Wolves right now. But you got a bunch of guys in that team that are on the wrong side of 30 that have some contracts coming up, and you got these young guys not developing compared to a Wolves team that, yes, also has some high priced guys that are 30 or under. And also their players are developing. So it was kind of a crossroads last night for those two teams. And Warriors Twitter was just a dumpster fire wanting to fire Steve Kerr and stuff. So it'll be interesting. I mean, you know how it is with people. But
I actually don't know how it is coming off of a dynasty and wanting to fire the coach. I don't know how that is.
I think that franchise or that fan base is just frustrated because they have all these young guys. And it's like they're kind of doing the two timeline thing too. And it's like, dude, you don't have two timelines. You got one timeline. It's as long as Steph Curry plays. And I don't know if I think it was first half last night, but they put Jaden on Steph, and Jaden did his damnedest to kind of keep Steph locked, in tow. I think Steph finished maybe under 30. He still had a good Steph night, but man, Jaden McDaniels in the first half had a possession where he played elite perimeter defense on Steph Curry, and Steph just shot his three higher and more arc and hit it anyway. Yeah. I felt so bad for Jaden because it's just like that dude's unguardable.
It's ridiculous.
So for Jaden to slow him down as much as he did, it sounds like Jaden should be okay. He left the game with what deemed to be cramps. We've all heard that before with this team. But if he can come back on Friday.
Because it was a calf situation, so hopefully it's not yet another calf strain or tear. Hopefully,
when Josh Okogie left this weird Lakers game a couple years ago with cramps, and then it was like, actually, he might have torn his hamstring. I was like, I had nightmares of that. But it sounds like Jaden should be okay. Hopefully he can play on Friday. Because, again, one of your favorite teams is coming to town tomorrow night, the Orlando Magic. And they are kind of a wagon with young talent as well. So it's not going to get any easier for Minnesota. But getting a win against the defending champs was big.
You can't sleep on them. By the way, the Warriors did beat the Hawks a month ago in double overtime. Klay Thompson scored 54 points in that game. Fire your stat guy.
Great stat by me. They haven't done anything since 2017. Actually, they did it last month. So good job.
So the upcoming schedule, the Magic on this Friday night, the Magic started 5-20. They're now like 5 games over 500 since that bad start, including 3 wins over the Celtics and a win on the road last week over the Sixers. And then you get a home and home against Denver, followed by road games at Utah, Memphis, and Dallas. So this was the start. Really going back to the New Orleans game on January 15th, this is a stretch of 10 playoff opponents out of 11 games, and the Magic playing like a playoff team the last 30 games or so, and you have started that stretch 4-1 going into this Orlando game. So,
you know what's crazy, too, is that obviously they have that players-only meeting the last night of 2022 against the Pistons. Just a terrible loss, embarrassing performance. They're 12-5 in 2023. That's tied for the best record in the league. And I was just kind of looking at this, but their loss, they did have that bad Pistons loss again on the 11th, bad loss. But then 1 point to the Jazz, 4 points to the Nuggets that they were kind of winning that game. I think that was a national TV game.
Yeah, they had that game, yeah.
Just a bad performance against the Rockets, but a couple points. And then a Kings game on Monday that's like, we all thought, even though I said that you always split those series, like they should have won that game. They kind of shot themselves in the foot. So again, you can make the same case for some of the wins being close, but it's just a different basketball team since they all got in the locker room and, yeah, I don't know, yelled at each other. It's been really cool to watch. So again, if you go lose 6 straight, everything we're talking about right now is kind of meaningless, but they just continue to kind of grind out these wins, and we are in the dog days of the NBA right now, right before the All-Star break, where teams are just trying to get to February 26th or whatever. So impressive stuff. lots of questions to be answered, whether it be this week or this spring or this summer with the roster. But you're getting everything you want out of, you know, a contract year D'Lo, a third year leap Ant, you know, a hot coach in the league in Chris Finch. You're kind of getting everything you want right now. It's all gelling, and you still have these big picture things like, when does Carl come back? How does Rudy still fit? So
yeah,
good stuff.
Love it, man. This is this podcast continues to be a blast. Thank you guys.
Yes, thank
for
you so
watching
much.
Or listening. If you could click the subscribe button and the like button on the YouTube channel here, the Score North YouTube channel, help spread the word about this. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, a 5-star rating and a positive review goes a long way to help spreading the word as well. All right, he's Kyle. I'm Phil. This is your favorite Timberwolves lifestyle podcast.